Excellent. Right, so I'm James. I'm one of the elders of Jubilee, along with Paul and Andrew and Simon. And also I lead the City Site leadership team, which is why you don't see too much of me here. And I gather that last week you had Gemma over, is that right? And she went through Hebrews 11, which is that famous section of Hebrews that with the lists, all of the great kind of Old Testament heroes of faith. And I get the two verses after it today. So you did a whole chapter last week, and this week we got two verses. So without further ado, let's get into them. I'm gonna read them from the ESV, and Toby's going to put the words up on the screen. And what I love about the ESV rendering of these verses, it puts them into just one colossal, packed sentence full of goodness and encouragement. So let's read it. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. How awesome is that? Let's read it again. Why not read it with me? Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. We sang it this morning. Keep your eyes upon Jesus. Jesus is the founder and perfecter of our faith. He is the author of our salvation. We should have a slide for this. If you are a Christian, then you will be very, very familiar with the atoning work of Jesus. And that's the thing. If you've been a Christian for any length of time, you're singing it every Sunday. We know the truth deep in our hearts, but so deep that sometimes familiarity almost just makes us numb to the enormity of the truth of it. So I hope that although it is something we're familiar with, it's not something that we are complacent about, because it's wonderful and so powerful that it becomes the central truth that our lives are ordered or become reordered around. Our eyes are fixed on him. Jesus is the new central focus for our lives, the new central focus that subdues everything else. The glorious and astounding truth that Jesus, the perfect Son of God, was nailed to a cross to pay the price for the result of our frail and very real humanity. Quite simply, our propensity, our programming almost, to mess up. See, Jesus' one perfect sacrifice removed the wedge that sin drove between us and the Father who made us and loves us, and remove it once and for all. The result of his sacrifice is that the relationship that God longs to have with us is restored for eternity. This truth is the joy that enabled Jesus to endure the cross. If you're a Christian here this morning, then you're living in that truth, and it will have changed your life forever. Now, We know this, and we thank God for it. It's what we've just been doing, yeah? We've been praising him. So as our lives go on, and we wade through the day-to-day of this world, why is our focus so easily drawn elsewhere? Maybe it's just me. This world that we live in offers us so much to look at, so much to distract us, so much to beguile us. The world we live in consoles itself with these things. The pursuit of stuff and ideas that make life easier. Yeah? I remember Sonali, one of the first things, when I first met Sonali, one of the first things she sort of said is, it's so, there's no challenge here. It's so straightforward compared to where you'd been living. We pursue stuff and ideas that make life easier. The things that pretend to numb the challenge and stress of our everyday. But even the world finds these comforts wanting and quickly moves on to the next new thing, only to find that empty and void as well. So why would we look anywhere but at Jesus? Now, as we know, this letter, or as hopefully you know by now, this letter was written to some first century Christians who were almost definitely Jewish in their heritage and had chosen to follow Jesus as their king, as their Messiah. And these original receivers of this letter faced very different challenges to us. They were being persecuted for their faith in Jesus. Their everyday was one of extreme opposition. Their new identity had cut them off from their heritage. Their very way of life was cut off because of the fact that they had encountered Jesus. They had to start living very differently. And this made them misfits in the society that they lived in. And so the author of this letter encourages them. Don't look at what you're enduring. Don't look at the suffering you're going through. Do what the great heroes of your culture did. Fix your eyes on the promised Messiah of God. That is Jesus. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, this therefore, this word is all of chapter 11, is all of what you had last week. This is the faith at work in the lives of the Old Testament heroes. This faith was not in the Old Covenant's temple system. We've learnt that as we've gone through to Hebrews, haven't you? How broken that system was. But in God's promise of a Messiah who would redeem his people. Chapter 11, verse 35 says, they placed their hope in a better life after the resurrection. See, they founded their lives on the hope of the Messiah who was to come. And that was true of the long list of people that Gemma read out last week. Names and stories that many of us will know well. But the ranks of that crowd of named witnesses is swelled to its huge status by those whose hope in God's coming Messiah enabled them to endure tremendous suffering as well as torture. See, some were jeered at and their backs were cut open with whips. Others were chained in prisons. Some died by stoning and some were sawed in half. And others were killed with the sword. Some went about wearing skins of sheep and goats, destitute and oppressed and mistreated. They were too good for this world, wandering over deserts and mountains, hiding in caves and holes in the ground. See, what we know is that things have been very bad for God's people for a very long time. Since returning to Israel from exile in Babylon, they had been oppressed over hundreds of years. So just one example we covered when we did our series on Daniel. Do you remember the series we did on Daniel, if you've been around that long? And in Daniel 8, there's a prophecy that is sort of horrifying, really, about the oppression that was to come through a guy called Antiochus the Fourth, Epiphanes. And Antiochus lived about 170 years before Jesus came, and he was really bad news for God's people. He believed he was the personification of the Greek god Zeus. Epiphanes means God manifest, and he was punished. And he punished the Jews by sacrificing a pig on the altar of the temple in Jerusalem, and to punish the Jews for refusing to give up the law of Moses. And he set up an object sacred to Zeus in the Holy of Holies in the temple. So this was real kind of desecration going on just at under 200 years before Jesus was born. He was responsible for killing thousands of God's people during a four-year period. Absolutely horrendous. And that's just one example. So when we read that verse that we've just read in chapter 11, it carries weight, this word therefore. Look at how the faith of those that went before you enabled them to stand in the face of such extreme persecution. The writer's saying, be inspired, people. Because their hope was in something not yet seen. But Jesus has come and risen again. You've seen it. So, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, what this isn't, though, is a call to find some inner strength in yourself. You know, girding yourself to carry on through. The kind of self-help a lifestyle guru might peddle you. Somebody on YouTube, perhaps with some amazing series of videos. Nor is it some kind of popular psychology with a helpful diagnostic questionnaire that will show you your strengths and your weaknesses. Anybody like those? Nor is it a philosophy that has weighed and analysed the suffering of others in answer to the struggles of life. What this is a call to faith, which is not something that we can conjure or engineer or just find in ourselves. Paul the Apostle writes this to the Ephesians. For it is by grace that you have been saved through faith, through faith. And this is not from yourselves. It is a gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast. So this faith and the life that goes with it is a gift from God. So if you're discouraged or facing difficulty or persecution, what do you do? Well, faith is a gift. So there is only one thing to do. Ask God for it. This great crowd of witnesses who surrounded the first hearers of this letter all received their faith from God. Whilst they lived under the law and were obedient to it, they knew the law could never save them. Oh, this wonderful faith. We have done nothing to earn or add to our salvation, and just as we've looked to God for the faith to believe in him, so we can look to God for the faith to continue in him. So let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up. The writer's encouragement is this. Given the great example of those that had gone before them, in the same way, allow the faith that God has given you to help you remain in him. To stand in him. To go on in him. Time for the shopping bag of surprise. Right. Now then, I gather that your runner has succumbed to an injury. Yes. He was coughing too much and broke a rib, which is a horrid thing. And so I had visions of Dave being able to help me with this. So who's going to be my substitute, Dave? Running or walking fast? It's not an enormous room to run around, but is somebody game for helping me with an illustration? Oh, come on, Steve. Thank you very, very much. In the shopping bag of surprise, I have a bag. Now, my wife's here. If you don't know Sarah, she's lovely. You can chat to her. Sarah has this thing about bags. And we have an amusing thing in our house, which is that any bag in the house will contain another bag, which will contain another bag, which will contain a further bag. Okay, so I'm quite pleased today that I've got a bag in a bag. It just is pleasing. Right. Stick that on, would you? Is it heavy? Yeah, I mean, it's got some weight. Not an enormous amount of weight, but it's quite a small bag, isn't it? So, yeah, okay. Give us a quick run round, would you? Very, very good. Right, excellent. Now, Steve, I know that you're a fit man. Come and talk to me. I know you're a fit man. And that you probably do some quite long distance walking and that sort of thing. Not these days, but, you know, what's the longest you've walked in a single stretch? Yeah, something like that. Okay, yeah. I did a walk with my dad last June after Motorfest, and we walked the length of Hadrian's Wall, which is 84 miles, and my dad's 84. And it was quite neat, you know, 84 miles, 84 years old, etc., etc. Had I had to do that walk, because there was one day where we covered, 16 miles, and had I had to do that walk with that backpack on, it's one of those things, you put it on, and at the start you think it's all right, but by the time you get to the end, it's a long way. So let me make life easier for you. Let us throw off this heavy weight that slows us down, and in the bag is a bag! So pleased. I've got a bag and a bag and a bag. And it's full of things that would weigh you down. Shall we throw them off? No, it's a bit of wood. It's a bit of St. Columba's. That's not a bit of St. Columba's. But it would weigh you down, wouldn't it? Yeah, okay. What we can do is we can put the bag back in the bag. And you can put it on again, and, you know, now it feels a whole lot better, doesn't it? Thank you very much. Brilliant. Beautifully modelled. I'll have the bag back, because the bag in a bag has got to go back in the bag. That's very important. You get the idea. What's lovely about this passage is it's full of metaphor and is helpful. So look, this exaltation does demand action on our part, but it is the opposite action to the kind you will find from a life coach. This is not about making us perform better in the physical sense, running an actual race, doing better at work or excelling in our studies, or just, you know, getting through the day. Well, not directly, at least. This is about getting rid of the stuff that is preventing the Holy Spirit from transforming our lives. See, what we've learned as we've gone through Hebrews is that we are the new temple. We are the place where the Holy Spirit lives. So this is about throwing off the stuff that prevents the fullness of the Holy Spirit coming in. The stuff that slows us down on our journey to maturity as Christians. So as the writer points out, that includes the sin that so obviously gets in the way of our relationship with Jesus and the work of his Spirit. But this encouragement to throw off also includes other weights that might not be directly sinful, but do nevertheless hinder us. Perhaps today, the greatest enemy to this call to action is its opposite, which is passivity. See, my question is, and as I was reading this, I felt the Holy Spirit asking this of me. What are you putting up with that you don't have to put up with? That you are unwilling to surrender to the Holy Spirit, or simply can't face that thing? See, passive behavior can be a common response when faced with difficult situations or uncomfortable emotions. And it's something that I recognize in myself, really. Sometimes when things are really at me, I just want to hide. I just want to shut myself away. See, at its core, passive behavior is generally a form of psychological defense that can lead to feelings of helplessness, though, low self-esteem, and even depression. Passivity can lead us to wanting to be satisfied and filled on our own terms without risking or working towards anything. You are, after all, worth it. You see, we seem to live in a society with an increasing entitlement to comfort without doing anything. And that's not surprising, because if you think about the technological changes we've lived through in the last 20 years or you've grown up with, they're all about making life easier, aren't they? You know, what's the first thing we're doing with AI? We're making life easier for ourselves. You know, we're getting stuff written for us, or I was presented with some stuff the other day by somebody who said, oh, I just pulled it off AI. Here you go. It's not what we really want, but it's an idea. But when that comfort doesn't come, it leads to confusion and feeling that life is just too much. Now, this is all rather neatly summed up by the story of the 2020s band Easy Life. Here they are. Anybody heard of Easy Life? No. Okay. If you're a young person, apparently, they were the big thing about 3 years ago or so. And they came and they played the Radio 1 big weekend when it came to Coventry. And it was, my children's generation were all very excited about this. This is the only reason I know about it, not because I'm with it. Now, they had this kind of laid-back, almost given-up music sound that kind of captured the malaise of the late pandemic period that we all lived through. You know, when we'd basically all given up. But then things got challenging for them. They were sued, somewhat ironically, by EasyJet for trademark infringement. And because they wanted an easy life, they didn't fight the ridiculous lawsuit. They just gave up. And now they're a band without a name, apparently. The passive pursuit of the easy life is a neat trick of the enemy that can ensnare us all too easily. But paradoxically, the greatest comfort of all is something that we haven't earned and have done nothing to deserve. See, we haven't earned our salvation. But what Jesus won for us came at great, great cost. So, let us resist the passive pull of comfort and ease that interferes with the work of the Holy Spirit in our lives. See, elsewhere in the world, we have Christian brothers and sisters who are facing persecution, who are facing murder and martyrdom and difficulty. Challenges for us are different. less in your face, less obvious. But throwing off the stuff that hinders us is worth the effort. See, the enemy wants to stop us, but once we face it, the Spirit will help us. The life set before us is better than any worldly comfort or ease. So, let us run the race with endurance. Hopefully, the author of our letter tells us how to do this, and we land back where we started, with our eyes fixed on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. See, there is nothing passive about what Jesus achieved for you. Because of the joy awaiting him, he endured the cross, disregarding its shame, and now he is seated in the place of honour beside God's throne. This is a call to action. I think it's hard to read these two verses and do nothing. So I think what we should do is we should worship. Simon, if you're up for leading us, and we should break bread because of the joy that was awaiting him. He endured the cross, disregarding its shame. Now he is seated in the place of honour beside God's throne. And as we break bread, why don't you do business with God? Ask the Holy Spirit to help you. If you're somebody that struggles with faith, you haven't got to find it in yourself. Ask God for it. If you're somebody that struggles to motivate yourself to go deeper with Jesus, you don't have to do it by yourself. Ask God for the faith to do so. He will provide it. It's a gift. If you're somebody that struggles with sin, or maybe the Holy Spirit is just prompting you about dealing with a specific thing at the moment, you don't have to do it by yourself. Jesus has done it for you. Bring it to God. Open up to him. Ask the Holy Spirit to work in your lives.